10. As crime scenes go, Desidora said, while looking at the study from the hall, I have more experience creating them than investigating. Yes. Ululenia was in human form, and her horn shone as a steady beacon. I am no hunter, unless virgins are involved. Well, let's start with what we know, Kale said, and stepped into the room. It was enormous and well lit with glass lamps that hung from the ceiling, and it was lined from floor to ceiling with bookshelves. Most were indeed filled with books, while a few had space taken up by small statues, old bones and pieces of jewellery. There were several tables, a large snuffed couch, and a fireplace, with a drink tray next to the couch. One chair lay on its side. The ground nearby was scorched. Ululenia stepped into the room as well, wincing and shaking her head as she did. What's the magic look like? Kale called to Desidora, while walking slowly around the scorch mark. The study was small enough for Desidora to get a decent look without stepping inside it herself, and some presence at the edge of the room pressed against her, urging her to stay outside. Desidora let the death aura take her, and the carpet shifted from a lovely burgundy and gold pattern into black and cold silver. At once she felt a pressure across her brow, and she stumbled, then righted herself. Words, strong ones. She pulled the death inside her, keeping it there but contained, and the pressure lifted. Very little magic, save that innate to fairy creatures would function in this room. Some of the items in the room are magic as well. The wards keep them under control. All right. Kale popped his knuckles. I need a drink. Anyone else need a drink? He looked over at the elven servant who had been left to help them, and who stood outside the study near Desidora. Hey, is there a way I ask for a drink without offending your culture of not making each other do stuff? Do I get it myself, or... The elven servant, a young man with pale green skin in which pale rose crystals glowed, smiled nervously. In general, sir, you say that you're thirsty for something, and then I offer to get it for you. Perfect. Can we assume I did that for an ale for me, a white wine for the priestess here, and... Kale looked at Ululenia. Ululenia was looking at the young man, her eyes half-lidded, and her pale dress tight and clingy. He may surprise me. The servant flushed and stammered and headed off to get the drinks. Desidora hid a smile. So, a direct magical attack seems unlikely. Silver is impossible, so unless the ground was scorched by alchemical fire of some sort, it must have been the dragon himself, trying to defend himself even as he fell. Alchemical fire would not harm him, Ululenia murmured. He is to fire what I am to nature. Then what struck him down? Desidora hopped up onto tiptoes and looked into the room at the scorch mark. You said he is the most powerful fairy creature you had ever met. Indeed. A golem sent by the ancients. Desidora shut her eyes and felt the magic around her. No, wards. One of the ancients, a weapon, or one of those crystal bands carried by a warrior. I don't think the wards would keep one of them out. The magic of the ancients had certainly ignored her attempts at magic. Ululenia shook her head. We cannot say for certain what magic the ancients possess, but the dragon prepared for centuries against them. If they killed him, I would think to see this house burning around the site of their battle. Dumb guy question. Kale was standing by the table where the chair had fallen. Why is silver impossible? The wards, Desidora said, pointing at the lines of magic she could see, and Ululenia could at least sense. No silver may enter the dragon's palace. Wait, which wards? Kale blinked. There are wards in here, and wards all over the palace. This estate was marked as his hunting ground, Ululenia said, but this room was his lair. Baseline wards all over the estate, Desidora clarified. As far as I can tell, they would trigger an alarm if silver, or a weapon of the ancients, entered the palace. And in this room, almost all magic is entirely suppressed, which is why I'm standing outside it. Kale picked up the chair carefully, holding his foot against the back feet as he brought it back up to its normal standing position. It just seems like it fits. Silver, scorch marks. The chair, standing up, was several feet away from the table, He knew whoever did it. Desidora couldn't see what he meant, but Ululenia nodded in agreement. He pushed the chair back from the table and stood to greet them. Right. So not a surprise attack while he was sitting, or the scorch marks would be on the chair. And not an enemy. Because he would have stood up quickly and knocked the chair in another direction, Desidora finished. You would make a decent Justicar. Kale made a face. Think I'll see how those drinks are coming along. He stepped out from the study, gave Desidora a quick kiss on the cheek, and headed off down the hallway. As the two doves huddled together against the winter's chill, Ululenia thought to Desidora, with a laugh in her voice. We're taking it slowly, Desidora said, but smiled. There's hardly been time to take it any other way. She let the death aura slip away, and for a moment she was a love priestess again. A very happy love priestess. Ululenia smiled in return, but her brow furrowed, her horn flaring momentarily. Scorch marks. She stepped around the dark patch on the floor, squinting. If this had killed the dragon, it would be much larger. What if someone disabled the dragon, then captured him instead of killing him? Desidora asked. It may be, but why waste the power? Ululenia stalked away from the scorch marks with sudden energy. Why not take him here and be done? It is what I would do. She stroked the spine of a book, ran a finger along an old statue, and kept walking. Unless they are ancients, against all we said was possible before. A hunter would store the magic that had made up the dragon to return to the forge of the ancients. They feed in different ways. Can you sense their magic? Barely. Desidora avoided saying anything about how what I would do sounded. I still don't see how an ancient would have gotten past these wards, though. True. Ululenia paused at the table and looked at the book that lay open. He was reading about the war between the Glimmering Folk and the ancients. Desidora raised an eyebrow. That's a rare book. Older even than the love song of Eilin Finial, Ululenia agreed. It looks to have been written by the earliest elves. She flipped through it. They believed the dwarves and the elves were creatures of the ancients, bred from humans as a noble might breed dogs. An unpleasant notion, Desidora frowned. How did we forget that? If the ancients committed so much evil upon us, how do we remember them as nothing but a great civilization that left us a lot of magic when it disappeared? Who writes the history books? Kale asked from behind her, and Desidora turned to see him coming down the hallway with a tray of drinks, the embarrassed elven servant trailing behind him. White people only even sort of remembered that there were glimmering folk, because they were often the old kingdom. It was dwarves and elves and Orajar over here, and we at least had songs and stories about the glimmering folk as dangerous bad crap. But even we didn't have much about the ancients, because the Orajar don't hang out with them. Your people tilled the fields, the elven servant said, and then looked down nervously. We were kept closer to the ancients to tend their crystals, and so our stories remember more. Right. Kale passed Desidora a wine glass. And then later the Old Kingdom white folks come over and see us tilling the fields and assume that's all we're good for, and they run the elves back into the elflands. And they never bother asking the Orajar about the old stories, so most of it gets lost. Desidora sipped her wine. It was cool and sweet and very, very good. That's a dark picture. Kale shrugged, and Desidora turned back to Ululenia. If the elves tended the crystal, and the Orajar tilled the fields, Kale finished. Desidora grimaced. Then who fought in this war? The ancients themselves? Some of them, yes. Ululenia flipped through the book. But the dwarves did most of the fighting. They turned from miners into warriors to fight against the minions of the glimmering folk. The trolls, the scorpion folk, and... Her voice softened. The ogres. Your buddies in the woods were made by the glimmering folk. Kale whistled. I suspected, Ululenia said, but I did not know for certain. Most of their tribes try to live with the land, but there is some part of them that always felt different. The dragon once said that we are not who our creators made us to be, said the elven servant. We are what we do with what has been given us. Ulilenia smiled as she came his way. I agree. I try to create as much joy as I can with what is given me. The elven servant flushed again and stammered a little, and Ulilenia brushed his robe as she walked by. After seeing such destruction, I would greatly appreciate a bath. She looked over her shoulder at the elven servant. Though, I confess, I am unused to the indoors. I would likely get lost unless someone showed me the way personally. I can help, the elven servant squeaked, and Ulilenia took his hand and led him off. She's a tiny bit off, isn't she? Kaya asked when he and Desidora were alone. More than a tiny bit. Desidora sipped her wine. I was being polite. To manners and silver. Kale took a generous swig of ale. It couldn't be silver. What if it wasn't silver when it came into the estate? Remember what Hessler did on the train job? He turned the book into a knife, turned the knife into a book. Wouldn't work. Desidora pointed at the wards. Transmutation effects have a sort of built-in reversal, so that the wizard who casts the spell can remove it at will. Like leaving the door open a crack, Kale asked. He looked around the room at the multitude of bookshelves, then started poking around in a very unsexy imitation of what Ulilenia had done earlier. Desidora rolled her eyes. Not particularly, no. But for the purposes of this metaphor, yes, the wards could see that the door was open, even if it was just a crack. Could you shut the door all the way? Desidora considered it. Oh, this is silly. Hold on. Ignoring the oppressive feeling of the wards, she let her death aura slip away and stepped from the hallway fully into the room as well. The wards weren't as painful when she was merely a love priestess. It would take a great deal of energy, she said, looking on the floor by the table. She had no idea what exactly she was looking for, but she was following Kale's lead. So it's not impossible. Kale poked behind a few books, then moved a statue discreetly to one side. Not impossible, no. But then you're inside with a silver weapon that is neither silver nor a weapon. Desidora reached the couch and ran her fingers between the cushions. And you've got no way to turn it back into the silver weapon you need for your attack. Sure you do. Kale passed her, grabbed the fireplace poker and jabbed at the ashes of the fireplace. You turned your silver weapon into a book or a scroll or something with magic, right? Desidora stopped. Oh, of course. I'm an idiot. Don't be so hard on yourself. Kale leaned over a vase by the fireplace. Love priestesses don't have to sneak anything more than love notes into places they don't belong. Scouts have to handle this crap all the time. I walk into this room with a scroll or a book, Desidora said. And then the words, which nullify most magic, dispel the transmutation magic, at which point I have... Kale pulled a blade from the vase. A silver dagger in the one place in the world that you shouldn't find a silver dagger. He held it up. And all the wards in here override the normal ones out in the rest of the estate, so it doesn't even trigger the alarm when it turns back. You are a devious man, Mr. Kale. Desidora leaned in and kissed him. It was a slow kiss, more than a peck and less than a big stage play make-out scene. He actually blushed when he pulled away. Well, I try. Come on, let's show Locke. He took four steps, left the room, and sighed as an enormous blaring alarm sounded throughout the palace. And you're very distracting, Sister Desidora, he called back. And she laughed despite herself, which was something she needed to do very much right then. Justicar Captain Pyvik flicked his message crystal absently, then sipped his morning kava and walked into the main pit. Where are we on the fairy creature disappearances? Looks like some of them are hiding, Tomlin said, squinting at the map on the wall. But there are fights too. Territorial disputes from what we can see, Durenki added. They are moving into each other's territory and fighting as a result. Pyvik took another sip of his kava and looked at the map. Any reason they should be doing that, beyond the desire to make my life harder? Tomlin was messing with the thumbtacks he'd stuck into landmasses.
Nothing we've had. I've got the disappearances marked in blue, and the fights people have reported marked in red. I've still got the last few days' worth of reports to go through, though. Oh, let me.
Derenki lifted his right arm. He had some new crystal gadget on his arm, red and glittery, and exactly as flashy as Pyvik expected for something Derenki would wear. It glowed for a moment as he tapped on the band, and then the device projected a series of tiny glowing dots onto the map.
What's that thing? Pyvik asked,
impressed despite himself, as Tomlin started quickly sticking thumbtacks into the glowing dots.
Paladin band,
Derenki grinned.
They just came out. It can do everything from simple image projection to tracking my calendar. There's even a built-in message crystal, so paladins, that's what we call ourselves, can talk to each other.
Damn, Pyvik nodded.
How much? Oh, I'm never buying a house ever, Derenki said. But it also includes something like a health enhancement. As far as I'm concerned, it was worth it. If everyone in the department had one of these, we could stop using paper and thumbtacks.
Tomlin glowered.
I like the thumbtacks.
He stuck a few more into the map, his big, beefy hands pinching carefully to get them into place.
Were you waiting to go to the cabinet meeting until you heard more about the fairy creature disappearances?
Derenki asked politely.
My understanding was that the recent incident at the Sunrise Canyon Processing Center was a higher priority.
Pyvik sighed.
I thought that thing tracked your calendar. Oh, I added the cabinet meetings to my schedule, just in case you became too busy and wanted me to take your place.
Pyvik waved and raised his carver mug. Tomlin and everyone else within earshot took a drink while Derenki rolled his eyes. As they did, Pyvik looked at the map. The blue thumbtacks, the disappearances, formed a rough circle around the center of the Republic. The red ones were all farther out, between the port cities that Heavenspire passed over in its yearly orbit around the Republic, or out of the edges of the country entirely. It wasn't marked on the map, but because he'd been looking at it in his reports, Pyvik knew that Sunrise Canyon and its processing center were located squarely in the middle of the Republic, which meant squarely in the middle of those two rings. A younger Pyvik would have called it out immediately. Justicar Captain Pyvik cleared his throat, finished his carver, and said,
I'm off to the cabinet meeting. Table the fairy creatures for now and focus on those deaths on the Imperial border. The Archvoyant wants everything nice and friendly when their delegation visits in a few weeks. Understood, Captain.
Derenki pressed his band, and the field of glowing lights flicked off, leaving Tomlin growling and muttering, hands still full of thumbtacks.
And the processing center? I'm on it. We'll see what Savart says.
Pyvik left before anyone could ask anything more. He thought as he walked, his long legs setting an easy stride a soldier never forgot. Locke's last report had said that she was headed to the processing center, that Derry was there and in danger, and that it could be tied to the return of the Ancients. He hadn't heard from her since. Now fairy creatures were fleeing the area, not just around Sunrise Canyon itself, but from the whole center of the Republic. They ran far enough, fast enough, that they crossed into other creatures' territory and were frantic enough to start fights. They were panicked. If fairy creatures weren't so damned reclusive to begin with, it would look like a stampede. The fairy creatures were the leftover bits of energy from the Ancients' magic. The Ancients had left their hunter golems with orders to track and kill the fairy creatures, so obviously there was animosity. The most obvious reason for the fairy creatures to be clearing the area was the return of the Ancients. Pyvik had helped stop agents of the Ancients from destroying a good portion of both the Republic and the Empire. If the Ancients had returned, he'd figured on fire raining from the sky and giant crystal golems crashing through the cities, leaving blood and destruction in their wake. His message crystal hummed at his side, and he fished it out, looked around the market square to ensure that nobody was standing too closely, and held it to his ear.
It's me, said the voice of Locke. We got Derry back, but we didn't stop the Ancients. They're not people. They're magic, as far as we can tell. At the processing center, they had these red crystal braces they called paladin bands. Each one carries the soul of an Ancient. They can take over anyone who wears one. We'll let you know when I find out more.
The crystal beeped as the message ended. Pyvik flicked it with his thumb, deleting the message. Pyvik was quiet on the rest of his walk to the Archvoyant's palace. A good scout, and he had been a good scout during the war, knew when to say little and watch. He watched the guards who checked him with the glamour wards and then waved him through. He watched the Archvoyant's steward, who showed him into Savard's breakfast room. He took the friendly ribbing at his usual tardiness and grabbed a fresh cup of kava and an expensive pastry from the tray by the table, and he watched the merchants and bankers and guildsmen who were working on one of Archvoyant's Savards find the money to do this project. There were too many robes. Sleeves Pyvik could deal with. Anything that didn't billow like the open-chested shirt of a romantic hero in a bad stage play would be tight enough for him to see the outline of the red crystal bands, or even the glow. But most of the important people in the Republic still wore robes, and the voluminous sleeves of a merchant's robes could hide anything.